We live in tumultuous times. It's easy to feel, perhaps, that these times are abnormal, that this is worse than it's ever been. But in fact, there has been tumult and fear, corruption among the powerful, and violence in every age since the dawn of recorded history. I say this not to diminish the concern that we have for the world and for each other and for those who are struggling against oppression. I say this to remind us that there have been those who struggled before we did, and their spirits guide us, surround us, and strengthen us for the work that we are called to do in the world. If you haven't already caught on, I am passionate about Unitarian Universalist history. I feel deeply rooted in our faith tradition's rich history, and I want to share that rootedness with all of you. Because it's easy to believe that we are a congregation unto ourselves. We're just the fellowship. But that's not true. We're not alone. We're embedded in a larger tradition, Unitarian Universalism. And it's easy to think that Unitarian Universalism itself is a pretty new thing, that we sprang up out of nothingness a few decades ago. But that's also not true. Our heritage has a rich, deep history that spans centuries and continents. But why does it matter? Who cares? Isn't that just denominationalism? Isn't history just dead people and ancient ideas? It matters because we need each other. It's easy to feel alone in the world, and I feel less alone, less fearful, when I know that my fellow Unitarian Universalists are also supporting love, justice, and peace in the world. And our history matters because our ancestors paved a path for us, religiously and spiritually, and our memories of them can create a great cloud of witnesses. They bolster us with their stories, their lives, which came before us. They call to us from that which comes after life. They challenge us to continue their work. Our ancestors give me strength. I'm not alone. I'm not the first to struggle. Our ancestors give us roots to strengthen our hearts and spirits for the daily work of being in the world, the everyday challenges of living and loving, and the larger challenges of fighting oppression and injustice. This month marks an important historical anniversary in our Unitarian faith. We celebrate this anniversary today, the 450th anniversary of the Edict of Torda, the law of religious tolerance that was passed in Transylvania by the Unitarian King John Sigismund in February 1568. Now, this, of course, is not a simple story, so I'm going to tell it to you, but don't blink and don't daydream because it's complicated. In the mid-1500s, the Protestant Reformation was sweeping across Europe. Roman Catholicism was no longer the only option for Christian worship and practice. Lutheranism, Calvinism were also vying for importance amongst the Christian religious landscape. Differences in understanding of Christian doctrine and church structure undergirded fierce debates and violent retribution among believers who differed in opinion from the majority in any given country across Europe. In 1531, a young doctor and clergyman named Michael Servetus wrote a heretical pamphlet. They didn't have Twitter back then. He wrote a heretical pamphlet entitled On the Errors of the Trinity. It challenged the standing doctrine of the Trinity of God, the idea that God is three beings in one, Father, Son, and Spirit, and argued instead that God was one. And if God was one, he said, Jesus then was not God, which of course was complete heresy. He continued his heresies for the next couple decades, publishing another anti-Trinitarian document called Christianity Restored in the year 1553, in which he challenged not only the Trinity but other doctrines too, and he was burned at the stake that same year for his heresy. Servetus was one of our first martyrs. And he was burned at the stake not by the Catholics, but by the Calvinists. That is how bad things had gotten. Meanwhile, right around the same time, another physician and cleric named Giorgio Biandrata was now the court physician and trusted religious and political advisor for Queen Isabella of Hungary, whose husband the king had just died, leaving her as queen and their newborn son, John Sigismund, as heir to the crown. In 1557, Queen Isabella issued the first of the Edicts of Torda, not the one we're celebrating today, but one that came before it. That Edict of Torda encouraged the various factions of Christianity to strive for peace and to settle their arguments by debate instead of bloodshed. In 1559, just 2 years later, Isabella died, leaving the throne to her son, John. Now, enter Francis David, known in his own time and place as David Ferenc. He had been a Catholic priest who later embraced the Lutheran Reformation and became bishop of the Lutheran Hungarian Church. As bishop, when a conflict arose between the Lutherans and the Calvinists, he was tasked with defending the Lutheran position in the debate. Remember the edict from Queen Isabella saying that debate would be the vehicle for religious change. And David won the debate on behalf of the Lutherans, but enough doubt was sown in his own mind that he eventually embraced Calvinism and became the superintendent of the Calvinist or Reformed churches of Transylvania. He was also good friends with Biandrata, the court advisor to the king, and thanks to their friendship, David became the court preacher to the king. Soon enough, Biandrata and David were challenging issues of the Trinity amongst their own Reformed Calvinist church, bringing forth the arguments that had been made by Michael Servetus several years before. They were leaning into a kind of Unitarianism before that was even a denomination into itself. Unitarianism being God is one, Trinitarianism being God is three. So ultimately, David preaching these Unitarian ideas in Calvinist pulpits brought division to the forefront. But he meanwhile had convinced the king to adopt his radical views, and in 1568, the king issued, under strong guidance from David, an edict to protect the wide range of Christian doctrine in the land. This is the Edict of Torda that we are celebrating today. The law that was inspired by the Unitarian court preacher Francis David, which states, quote, "In every place, preachers shall preach and explain the gospel according to their understanding of it. If not, no one shall compel them, for their souls shall not be satisfied." End quote. It goes on in the edict to say that preachers should not be reviled or threatened for their teachings. But I love that line. No one shall compel them, for their souls would not be satisfied. Now this law, remember, this was 1568. This law is revolutionary, certainly. It allowed the Reformation to take hold without bloodshed in Transylvania, where it had not been possible almost anywhere else in Europe. And when I think about our history, I think about the people who came before us, who gave us gifts. I think about tolerance and a commitment to a faith of conscience as the gift given to us in 1568 by our Unitarian ancestor, Francis David. So this law, it was revolutionary, but let's not overstate it. The law protected preachers and churches, not individual freedoms, nor did it provide protection for non-Christians, Jews, and Muslims. I hesitate to view a law from the 1500s with modern eyes, but still, it wasn't everything we might hope for. And so this edict of toleration is not really what I want to celebrate today. It's cool. It's important. Certainly, with our current federal government interpreting religious freedom to mean many things, including discrimination, I could preach for a solid week on why Francis David's contribution to our understanding of tolerance and religious freedom is important. You're welcome for my not doing that. But I don't find that conversation about tolerance particularly compelling today. Today, in the midst of a culture of fear, I'm more compelled by what happened next in the story. In 1568, the king issued the Edict of Toleration, but the controversy of anti-Trinitarian teachings was still racking the Calvinist church. And so, as had become custom, a debate was scheduled by the king himself in the palace hall. The debate, which was between those upholding the Trinity and those who opposed it, the Unitarians, lasted 10 days. In the end, David, who was speaking on behalf of the Unitarians, won the debate. David and Biandrata were given use of the king's printing press, and they published Unitarian works. In 1571, just a couple years later, the king declared the Unitarian Church as its own thing, separate from the Reformed Church, and as one of the four legally recognized churches, not just tolerated, but recognized and received churches, with David at its head. That was King John Sigismund's last public act. He was in a carriage accident the next day, and he died 3 months later from his injuries. Francis David sounds like many of us in this room. He was a Catholic, and then a Lutheran, and then a Calvinist, and then eventually a Unitarian. Many among us, I know, were born to one faith, tried others, and then have eventually found our way here. I find courage in Francis David's search, his unwillingness to settle for a faith that did not speak to his spirit. The legal recognition of the Unitarian Church by the king allowed it to flourish in Transylvania, where it did not flourish anywhere else. There were no other Unitarian kings ever. Fast forward 5 centuries, and in the late 20th century, we modern American Unitarian Universalists rediscovered our Unitarian ancestors in Transylvania, and our partner church council was born. This fellowship was among one of the earliest congregations to take on a partnership with a Transylvanian Unitarian church. We were partnered with the congregation in Deva, Transylvania, Romania. That partnership still flourishes. And you might remember that we welcomed the minister from Deva here this past fall, and we dedicated the beautiful gift from the congregation in Deva to us, the kopiafa, the wooden pole that stands right outside that window. But back to our story. After the king died, some political maneuvering occurred, and since there was no heir, a Catholic king was appointed, named Stephen Bathory. Bathory agreed to uphold the Edict of Torta and to protect the received or recognized religions, Unitarianism among them. But he warned, further religious innovation would not be tolerated. If the religions changed anything about their doctrine or practice from the way they existed in 1571, they would be no longer protected. Innovation, he said, would be met with severe punishment. Biandrata managed to remain in the new king's court, but Francis David was dismissed from court. And the Unitarians flourished despite the new king's distaste for their faith. They called Francis David as their bishop. But Francis David could not allow his own personal faith or the new tradition that he loved to stagnate. This was a guy who had been Catholic and then Lutheran and then Calvinist and then Unitarian. Stagnation was not his style. And so he continued. He continued studying and learning and changing his views. He began to preach new ideas from Unitarian pulpits, despite threats from the king. Biandrata was terrified for the future of the Unitarian Church. He wrote to David, asking him to stop preaching the new ideas for fear that the king would find out and strip the Unitarians of their privileged, protected status. David would not cease. He argued that he wasn't innovating. He was just simply purging the faith of errors and superstition, fearing for the future of the church, and I would assume for himself. Biandrata himself reported David to the king. David was ordered not to preach, but he did, twice the following Sunday, telling his congregations why he was about to be arrested. And arrested he was, and tried for the crime of innovation. The prosecutor in the trial was David's old friend and fellow Unitarian, Giorgio Biandrata. David was found guilty and imprisoned in a dungeon in Deva, where he died some months later. That dungeon in Deva is now a major pilgrimage site for Unitarians around the world. And if Deva sounds familiar to you, it's because the Unitarian congregation there is our partner church. We here at the fellowship are honored to be partnered with such a historically significant site for our faith. And so this is a tragedy. This is a sad story. But it's a story that reminds me that the arc of the universe is long. In this story, Francis David could not be kept silent. As the Edict of Torda said, his soul could not be satisfied. He was guilty and willing to die for the sin of innovation, a sin that we today would call an incredible gift. We have the Wonder Box here because we want our children and people of all ages to remember the importance of not knowing, of wondering, of having humility, and being willing to change our minds. This is the gift that Francis David gave us. And the courage he had, courage to the death, gives me strength in times of trouble. So, in addition to tolerance, I remember David for his innovative spirit. Today, I remember David. But I also remember Biandrata. I feel kind of sad for Biandrata. He has been remembered in our history as the bad guy. But he was trying to protect the church from persecution. He was trying to uphold the law. To write him off as the villain in the story is unfair. If we're honest with ourselves, I think we might feel like Biandrata. We might feel like him a lot. And this is my fear, that we have become too comfortable with our privilege and safety, too accustomed to the way things are, that we become unwilling to change because it's uncomfortable or scary or illegal. What if people leave the fellowship? What if people talk bad about our public stances in the community? What if we lose our tax-exempt status? Our ancestors remind us to be bold. Francis David is the founder of the Unitarian Church, and he died for the right to keep it alive and not to allow it to fall into stagnation. As we prepare to leave this place today, I wonder, who are we in today's stories? Are we the Francis Davids? Or are we the Giorgio Biandratas in the challenges big and small that we face today? If we all wore bracelets, like my Christian friends did growing up, and it said WWFDD, what would Francis David do? What would we do? The editor of The Sun magazine, which we heard earlier, faced a challenge of conscience. Well, would he do what was safe for his business, his magazine? Would he do what was easier, cheaper, probably better for stakeholders? Or would he do what his conscience called him to do? The line in that story that struck me the strongest was, he said, "I suppose I could have simply apologized for our mistake and prayed that a prison gang leader would never read what the inmate had written. But what's an apology or a prayer worth if we don't also do everything in our power to make things right?" That's the lesson that I draw from Francis David. What are my prayers worth? My words? My Facebook posts? If I'm not willing to follow it up with action, with courage, and with conviction. If I'm not willing to risk people staring, or worse, fighting back. If I'm not willing to risk breaking the law for what is just and right. We might ask ourselves, who would we be in 1930s Germany when things were getting bad? I ask, who would we be in 1570s Transylvania or 2018 United States? Who would we be? Who will we be? We have declared ourselves as a fellowship to be a sanctuary congregation to host undocumented immigrants who might be at risk of unjust deportation. That is a bold and risky choice. May we have the courage to continue our bold and risky choices, to follow Francis David's example. And we don't have to do it alone. That is what gives me strength and hope. We're not alone. Look around. We are surrounded in this place by each other and by the wider Unitarian Universalist faith community in our country and in our world. And we are surrounded by the great cloud of witnesses who spur us on with their memory, and they bring us to the work that they could not finish, that we will not finish, but that we are nevertheless still called to continue. May it be so. Amen.